Hey gang, welcome to National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, the Intergalactic Free Speech Center. That's right, we are the because they're having free speech problems on the planet Vulcan. At least that's what Leonard Nimoy has been telling. And no wonder when you consider everybody on Star Trek, all the Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner, what their tribal affiliations were. And they would have use for the Kosher-tified app because they might be keeping kosher. And the Kosher-tified app will let you know if your food is kosher certified or not. Well, especially if it's not. It gives you a list of non-kosher certified foods, which is good for you and good for us and good for Mark Dankoff. Mark, welcome to the show.
Dr. Slattery, good to be with you, and had a good time being with David Duke yesterday on Rents.
We were discussing. And you had a great show.
Yeah, we had a very good conversation on Syria. We especially zeroed in on some of David Stockman's excellent summations of what has been and what continues to go on there. And then we took a little bit of a look at the late Serena Sheem of Press Television, who in fact was assassinated by Turkish intelligence 5 years ago this month for reporting on the amount of traffic that was going on the Syrian-Turkish border that involved ISIS trucks with stolen Syrian oil making their way to Turkish oil companies, especially the one controlled by Erdogan's son.
Yeah, she and was threatened that's officially all very interesting.
Yes.
It seems Turkey kind of switched sides in the middle of the war. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
Well, it's an interesting situation, isn't it? Because Turkey's relationship with the United States seemed to be greatly altered by these accusations and counter-accusations in regard to an attempted coup against Erdogan, where it was rumored that the United States may have played a role in it. I'm trying to remember the name of this guy that's gotten American asylum that's been here for quite a while.
Yeah, he's in Pennsylvania, I think in Philadelphia somewhere. I don't know his name, but he was maybe he was the wannabe Khomeini. He's some. Is he a religious leader or a religious-affiliated leader? But he was somebody in exile who was more or less the figurehead of a coup.
Right, and this individual, whose name we could pull up very quickly, was thought to be behind an attempt to get at the Erdogan regime, and apparently the Turks were suspicious that the United States had attempted to pull the plug on Erdogan for reasons not entirely clear to me. But at any rate, since that time, Erdogan has seemingly made up with the Russians, even though Turkey's in NATO, even though Turkey illegally shot down a Russian fighter plane that was in Syrian airspace quite a while ago, in the some 3 or 4 years ago. Now Turkey has purchased Russian S-400 anti-missile systems.
And the guy's name, I'm sorry, Fethullah Gulen, is that
yeah,
him?
Yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy. And so you have a situation where that's the situation as the Turkish regime has seen it, and again, I don't know the extent to which in this instance there was overt American involvement in the attempt to overthrow Erdogan that was allegedly connected to this fellow, Gulen or whatever his name is, but nonetheless, the Turks perceived it that way. And therefore, their relationship with the United States has been fairly strange since then. They're still in NATO, yet they buy S-400s from the Russians. And now this situation in Syria is very interesting because clearly Erdogan was quite happy with the notion that Syria would be dismembered because he was so clearly receiving oil shipments from ISIS in dealing in Syrian oil that had been stolen by ISIS that was being trafficked both to Erdogan and in some cases finding its way to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've got a circumstance, of course, where Erdogan has invaded Syria because of his concern about the Kurds and the sectarian Kurdish movements that he has perceived to be terrorist organizations. And in this particular case, the interesting thing is that Syrian nationalists are in fact accusing Erdogan and Trump of collusion. Their claim is that Erdogan had the green light to come into Syria as long as the United States had the time to secure Syrian oil fields. That's something that Tyler Durden talks about that's on our big board at the Zero Hedge publication. But the long and the short of it is that right now we have a situation where in Syria itself, Erdogan apparently has come to some kind of an agreement to have a ceasefire with the Syrians at the same time that the Syrians are deploying forces to meet this Turkish challenge. And I think at this particular juncture, if the UN had any backbone at all, which we know they don't, they would simply say, okay, Syria is for Syrians. The United States never had any legal standing in this country. Get out. The Israelis and the Saudis have no legal standing in this country. Get out. Stop supporting these Sunni Wahhabic terrorist organizations. In Turkey, you get out too, and let Syria be Syria. That would obviously be the solution to this problem. George Galloway, as I mentioned on Duke's show yesterday, has said that officially to the Russia Today outlet. And of course, Mr. Galloway has been in the British Parliament for a long time. And he has simply told the Kurds that, much like David Stockman has outlined, the Kurds are caught in the middle of a power play where they are in over their heads. This is not the first time they have miscalculated. Nope. In these activities. The Kurds have always been very, very friendly with the Zionists. Mm-hmm. In terms of their fitting into Zionist plans to continue balkanizing the Middle East. So the Kurds are now in a situation where they're caught between a rock and a hard place, and Galloway's advice.
Well, they're between Iraq and Turkey.
Yes, in this whole struggle between Iran and the Shia Crescent on the one hand, and Netanyahu and the Zionists on the other, the Kurds are now at a point where I think they need to. This is basically what Galloway has been saying to them and saying to the Russian media about them. They need to go back, make a deal, make amends with Assad, throw their weight in with the Syrian government, and get out of this situation that they put themselves into.
Yep.
Where they're in the middle of a crossfire that's going to hit them big time. It is hitting them big time.
Yeah, and I think that's what's happening. So Turkey, the way I see it, the name Erdogan, it is spelled with a G, although I think in Turkish it's a G with a crescent-shaped accent mark over it. According to Wikipedia, that is pronounced W. I don't speak Turkish. He's got his own agenda. Turkey's always had their own agenda. And at the beginning of the so-called civil war in Syria, which was an invasion, and a foreign invasion very much facilitated by Turkey, the Turks were on the side of creating ISIS. And when the Russians came in, I believe it was late 2015, with their air force, they came in late 2015, maybe September, end of September 2015, the Turks actually wound up shooting down a Russian plane. Very, very dangerous thing to do. The Russians were invited by the legitimate government of Syria to be there. And so for, a while, the Turks were an obstacle to Bashar al-Assad, the government, the president of the government of Syria, to reestablish control over his territory. It seems that in 2016 there was a coup attempt. This is when Obama was president, and a coup attempt that was likely CIA connected. And if whether it was or not, and I think it probably was, Certainly Erdogan saw it as being CIA connected, and seems to have switched sides. And apparently President Putin had tipped him off about the coup in enough time that he was able to stave it off. And that seems to have been a very very much a turning point in all of these affairs. The only reason that the Syrian government wasn't able to regain control over all of its territory, it did regain its control over most of its territory, but it couldn't gain control over the Kurdish held territory, which was more than just the traditional Kurdish homeland. They had actually wound up, as ISIS was crumbling, they were able to move into fill the vacuum with the assistance of the United States. And, you know, the United States assistance, you know, not just weapons and training, but also human shields. So the Russians weren't going to bomb Kurdish positions if it was going to be at the risk of killing Americans. So the thing is, it's not, you know, we get this narrative from the, I'll say the fake news media, that these Kurds were our allies who were fighting our battle for us against ISIS. And of course, it's not true. It's not true. We were, so ISIS was a creation of the United States and Israel and the Gulf states and Saudi Arabia and Turkey and Jordan. And the Kurds were just opportunistically trying to take advantage of ISIS, you know, of the fall of ISIS. They were trying to pick up where ISIS left off, basically, and were able to do that because we were helping them. So it wasn't that they were helping us, it was we were helping them. Are we obliged to help them forever? And it just makes sense. What you spelled out makes sense, that they will face up to reality, turn to the Syrian government. And I think in pretty short order, given the power politics that are going on here, I think the Turks will be allowed to occupy for a short period of time, a matter of weeks or a couple of months maybe, a strip along their border. And then when it's established that the PKK and other Kurdish groups are no longer present in that border, I think they'll retreat. I don't think they have any interest in staying in there long term. But what do you think, Mark?
Well, I think at this particular point, Turkey has to assess the risks. And at this particular juncture, clearly, President Putin has made it clear that all of the various foreign powers that have been in Syria need to get out. And obviously that's being directed at the Turks, that's being directed at the Americans and the Israelis and the Saudis. But then Vladimir Putin went on to say that once the situation stabilizes, if there is no need for Russian military presence in Syria, the Russians will be more than happy to get out.
Once the situation my dogs stabilizes. Are notifying me of an emergency. I'll be back in 60 seconds. Please carry the show.
Okay. So basically you have a situation where Vladimir Putin has said that he would be more than happy to get Russia out of Syria, that the Russian presence in Syria was merely to combat ISIS and Al-Qaeda and to combat the forces that are aimed at his ally, Syria, and that were aimed at Russian base rights in Syria that had been granted by the legitimate central government of that country, and that Vladimir Putin was in a circumstance where at the same time he wanted to stop this encirclement of his own country that has been going on in the Ukraine and elsewhere. And then Mr.
Sorry
Putin, I think, wants to deflect any notion that there is going to be an American, Anglo, Saudi, Zionist alliance in an attack on Iran. So with all of that involved, it's interesting that Putin is basically speaking common sense here, and that is he was protecting his own ally, and legitimately so. He was opposing the real terrorists in that country, Al-Qaeda and ISIS and the Al-Qaeda affiliates who were being supported. And let's emphasize this, as I did on the Duke Show yesterday, because there is so much garbage on Twitter from all these mainstream media sources and from Republicans and Democrats about Kurds being used to defeat ISIS. Mm-hmm. This is complete garbage, folks. Mm-hmm. The Kurds were being used by the Zionists to continue Balkanizing Syria.
Exactly.
And that it was the Russian government and the Syrian Arab army and any assistance that they did receive from Iran and Hezbollah, I think, which has been largely overplayed, that defeated ISIS. Syria defeated ISIS. The mm-hmm. legitimate government defeated ISIS with the help of their Russian allies and secondarily assistance certainly from Iran and from Hezbollah. So that's the bottom line on this. And the notion that the United States is, it's just amazing. And on Twitter right now, Syria Online, Syrian Girl, and some of these other sources are posting video of all of the statements made going all the way back to 2011 from presidents of the United States, secretaries of state, key politicians on the neocon right and on the neoliberal interventionist left, who were all openly saying that we needed regime change against Assad in mm-hmm. Syria.
Assad must go. Assad must go.
Yes. And now all of these people are saying that the United States never intended regime change in that country. It is absolutely the most preposterous Orwellian nonsense that I potentially have seen in my lifetime. And, of course, these fine sources on Twitter that are posting these videos and saying, okay, let's refresh everyone's historical memory on the degree to which these people were lying then and the degree to which they're lying now in saying that this is not what they were advocating then, when it's all right here. Anybody can watch this stuff, and here it is. So in this particular case, it seems to me that we have one of two things that's going to happen as a result of what's going to has transpired in Syria. The neocons and Zionists, thankfully, for those of us who are American nationalists and who don't believe in American involvement in these wars and playing factions and countries against each other for Zionist global interests, we thankfully salute President Assad and President Putin for kicking the hind ends of all of these criminal plotters, including some in our own government who are trying to overthrow a legitimate government illegally. Now, having said that, the question is, where do the neocons and Zionists go from here? They have been significantly checkmated, it seems to me, in Syria. And do they simply say, well, we better just kind of back off and take a deep breath because we didn't anticipate this Russian intervention in Syria. We did not anticipate the resilience of the Syrian Arab army. We did not anticipate the support that Assad quite clearly has from all of these non-Alawite Shia factions in Syria, including the Syrian Christians. They're all pro-Assad. And with the United States and Israel and Saudi and the United Arab Emirates and all these neocons in the American government and Zionists in the American government and both of the major political parties having been stripped of their underwear, they're mm-hmm. running naked down the freeway. Yes, they were involved illegally in that country. Yes, they were working with ISIS and Al-Qaeda terrorists.
Yeah.
Yes, they got their butts handed to them.
In other words,
trying to figure out what they're going to do from here.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. We'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to National Bugle Radio. So, Mark, I know yesterday I had sent you a little interview with a advisor to President Erdogan. I don't know her name, but she was an advisor, and she was talking to Steve Inskeep. And then yesterday evening on the PBS NewsHour, the odious Judy Woodruff had the Turkish ambassador on her show, and in both cases, Steve Inskeep from NPR and Judy Woodruff from PBS, who are both of these public broadcasting systems have gone totally neocon in terms of their policy. They're completely indistinguishable from neocons, but they were saying, oh, what about the Kurds? What, you know, didn't they beat ISIS for us, and now we're abandoning them, and all of this stuff, and at everything
pure
that
garbage.
They pure garbage, and they were being called out on the pure garbage with citations from actually your own CIA says such and such. Well, actually, your own State Department has this group as a terrorist organization. Well, actually, the New York Times reported in such and such. So. Every single point was countered. And it's not as if I'm saying, oh, the Turks are great, because the Turks had a lot to do with creating this crisis in the first place. But I do think that Turkish interests and Syrian government interests overlap a great deal now. And neither wants to let this Balkanization by way of the Kurds go any further. And I think that that there's probably some sort of tacit agreement, tacit recognition from the Syrian government and from the Russian government that probably what Erdogan did was needed to break this deadlock, to get the Americans out of northern Syria, and we can tolerate it for a limited period of time. And I think on the Turkish side, if you listen to those two interviews, it's not as if they want to stay there forever. They have a specific goal, and that's to remove the Kurdish fighters, what they call the terrorists, with good justification, to remove them from those areas. I don't think they want to stay there, and to create a safe zone to repatriate millions of Syrians who had fled the war. And I think that's all reasonable. Am I missing something?
Well, I think the thing that you were breaking up on me a little bit, but I got everything that you were saying, Patrick. I don't know if this is the case for your end or mine, but at any rate, it's me that what we have in the situation now is a circumstance where the bankruptcy of the neo-Nazis in Syria has come full circle. You have had the displacement. You had a country of about, as I recall from Stockman's article, 23 million people. You had at least 7 million of that had been displaced outside Syria. You had another 6 or 7 million of that population that has been internally displaced within the country. And when you look at the complications that this neocon Zionist policy has introduced morally as well as politically and tactically, we have achieved the worst of all possible objectives. We have ruined the lives of millions of people as a result of pursuing these Zionist policies, these Bernard Lewis policies in the Middle East, the so-called
Bernard Lewis, who was a
famous plan, the Yanon plan.
Bernard Lewis was a Jewish academic, 20th century. I guess, is he still alive? If he is, he's pretty old by now.
Not sure.
Yeah.
The Yanon plan certainly also outlines the same type of thinking in regard to the need for the Israeli state to continue its supremacy in the Middle East. We need to have the ongoing terror and the ongoing land theft that they continue to undertake in Palestine and in Gaza and on the West Bank, at the same time that Israel's policy historically and presently has always been to balkanize other countries by getting these countries involved in wars, by fomenting a rebellion and dissatisfaction within these countries, supporting different and various factions within countries against central governments, employing occasional coup d'etats and false flags and assassinations and all the rest of it. Well, in Syria, where has this gotten us? This has not only destroyed a Syrian nation that is in the process of amazingly recovering in spite of the evil that our Zionist-occupied government has supported in their country. But now we have a situation, the American star has been on the descendancy ever since 9/11, both in regard to tactical and strategic positions in the Middle East, our national debt, the perception of us abroad, and Philip Giraldi pointed this out so well in this piece he did for the Strategic Culture Foundation on this Jewish Undersecretary of the Treasury who's been sicking the FBI out on American political activists and journalists who want to attend conferences in Lebanon and Iran,
right,
dealing
and
with issues Middle Eastern. And
the we're coming up on the break. We'll hear more about that when we come back.
Sure.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey, gang.
Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets, even with a growing audience every day. RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s, along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
So welcome back to the show. So, Mark, you were saying just before the break.
Yes, our policy in Syria has resulted in the worst possible set of circumstances. We have ruined the lives of untold millions of people. We have put ourselves in a situation strategically and tactically where the blowback against our obnoxious neocon Zionist policies in the Middle East is higher than ever. Philip Giraldi, his recent piece on how our Jewish Undersecretary of State for finance and terrorism or something to that effect within the Justice Department, one Sigal Mandelker. Dr. Drawley's article shows her in her office with all these Zionist flags behind her. She has been persecuting and sicking the FBI on American political dissidents and journalists who want to attend these Middle Eastern conferences in Tehran and Beirut. That are trying to dissect what American policy really is in that region. So we've got a circumstance where our stock abroad has gone way down. We've become a domestic police state and persecuting people that don't like the neocon Zionist line in our foreign policy. It's getting worse and worse. Our national debt continues to worsen, of course. And we find ourselves now in a situation in Syria alone where our policies have resulted in the ascendancy of Vladimir Putin, the strengthening of the Assad regime, in a perception around the world, frankly, Secondly, that the United States is no longer perceived as it used to be perceived as a fairly benevolent star of light, at least in a lot of places abroad. The United States is now perceived as the Prince of Darkness in much of the world, and perhaps justifiably so. And we have a situation where, of course, as we enter this obnoxious impeachment proceeding, as we hear more about this Ukraine gate business, which is diverting us from what the United States did in that country in February of 2014, as we get into the whole circumstance of the blowback against what we have done in Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East, it raises the question as to where we go from here. And what the two major parties, largely controlled by Zionist interests, in what they would like to do in the Middle East, but have largely been, it seems to me, checkmated from doing, at least at present, in the Middle East. And right now they are clearly trying to cover themselves in the media by denying that the U.S. was supporting these Sunni Wahhabic extremists, by denying that the U.S. Was aligned with terrorist elements, not only in Syria but elsewhere in the region, by denying what is clearly obvious, that Israel and Saudi are the chief terrorists that we work with in the Middle East. ISIS and Al-Qaeda are simply symptomatic of that disease. And then, of course, the whole question of trying to make the Kurds into something that they are not. The Kurds have had a very, very checkered political history. There have been a lot of terrorist elements within the Kurdish nationalist movement. Somebody sent me on Twitter something I sent you in RBN during the break, showing the Kurdistan Workers' Party flag of 1978 with a communist hammer and sickle in the middle of it. And then, of course, we get into the whole situation of what you hope will be a reassessment of everything that the United States has done just since 9/11 alone. But certainly we can't be optimistic about that. The latest statistics show how the deck was stacked against Gabbard in the Democratic debates that were the last Democratic debates televised. You had mainstream people in media trashing Gabbard after this last debate, including a guy with a Jewish surname from Newsweek that I took on Twitter. You know why you don't like Gabbard? Yeah.
Yeah, no, actually, you were just starting, your connection was starting to deteriorate, either yours or mine, but one or the other. We're having a little difficulty with
just,
it.
Just to this guy from Newsweek. Okay.
Okay.
How are we doing now?
Maybe we're doing better. So somebody from Newsweek was trashing Tulsi Gabbard.
They were trashing, I have to go back and look this guy's name up, and I basically said, hey, the reason Gabbard is because she's the one Democrat who is talking about what the American people might yet discover, even though she's not talking about it yet, at least. And that is the fact that all of you guys at Newsweek and all of these other American mainstream media outlets are simply singing the Zionist line on foreign policy and are trying to continually conceal from the American public who it is that is driving these American military involvements in the Middle East, and where we should not be involved.
And, of course, Newsweek is a joke. It went bankrupt. I think it owes a huge amount of money on its building or its offices. And who bought it up on the cheap? It was Jane Harman, who's, I guess her husband is some sort of, you know, rich Jewish guy. She was in Congress. She, before Adam Schiff, she was the head Democrat, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. So she's kind of a spooky Jew. And she and her husband bought Newsweek. And so there you go. No surprise there. Oh, by the way, Mark, did you hear about, are you aware of Jim Fetzer? Do you know the name Jim Fetzer?
It was Pat Buchanan that
Okay. Yeah, we are having some connectivity issues. I'm not sure if it's me or you, but Pat Buchanan.
Yeah, I don't know who Jim is. I've not worked with him except maybe once in the distant past we were both on the same show or something, but yeah.
So Jim Fetzer, and you know, I don't mean to speak ill of him. I know he has his own perspective on things, and he's well known for saying that Sandy Hook, among other mass shootings, have been staged incidents with crisis actors. Well, yeah, you know, you could look at that and say, well, maybe he's just a crank. But here's the thing. He's been sued, and I guess the judge has awarded a parent of somebody from a Jewish parent, by the way, of somebody from Sandy Hook who had Jewish lawyers. And there's a, I think it's a $460,000settlement, or not settlement, a finding. He is supposed to pay some Jewish family $460,000 because he hurt their feelings. So what does that say for our freedom of speech? What does that say for, you know, our freedoms in America?
Well, I think you've got a situation clearly where freedom of speech in the United States has completely gone by the wayside. And in this regard, when you are looking at any of these situations, the thing that Giraldi has talked about, the obvious mainstream media marginalization of Gabbard without explaining to the public why they're doing that, any of these other situations that involve these legal matters being pursued against people like Fetzer,
it is what it is. We can expect more of it in the days ahead.
Okay. Hey, if you're connecting by your computer as well as your phone, you are successfully connected both ways, so you can terminate the previous connection. All right. I know you had a number of other interesting articles that you were prepared to talk about.
Yeah, let me pull those up on the big board because of these technical problems. I went from one means of delivery to another. So I'm in the process of getting to National Bugle Radio.
Okay. I will say while you're doing that, you know, we're in this for the money, okay? We're in this for the big bucks. Everybody knows that, and we're rolling in money, and that's why we have the best equipment. That's why we can spend all day doing nothing but this.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, we are consummate professionals here.
Well, that's right. We are consummate unpaid professionals, but we have been in this with our hearts and our minds and our souls for a very, very long period of time. And I think most of our listeners will agree, whether they're listening to RBN or reading the American Free Press or the Nationalist Times, that any of the activists that have been involved in producing news content, either of a broadcast character or of a print character, have largely been broke for however many years they've been doing it.
So, you know, we wouldn't be broke if we had a fair system. We could raise money. We could have Patreon accounts or PayPal accounts or sell subscriptions or whatever. But we can't.
Yeah.
They won't let us.
Yeah, that's right. And so just as one example of that, and I'll get into a few other news stories here, Don Wassel of the Nationalist Times is one of the people that has had his newspaper and his website demonetized for absolutely no legitimate reason other than the fact that the powers that be in social media and in PayPal and elsewhere don't like the political point of view that's being expressed there, which is anti-Zionist and nationalist. It is a responsible newspaper. It is a great newspaper. Some terrific people write for it. And he's just the latest example I can think of the sort of thing that many of us, including this broadcast, have been dealing with for a long, long period of time. Let me list a couple of other news stories here. I talked about this on Rents Radio yesterday. This month marks the fifth anniversary of the death of Serena Shim, who was a colleague of mine at Press Television Iran. She was a Lebanese-American. Her mother, as I understand it, lives in Michigan. Serena was a single parent, and she had her life taken away from her under circumstances that point to Turkish intelligence as having deliberately killed her. Why? Because Serena Shim, early on, was providing international television coverage from the Turkish-Syrian border, complete with film, not just her voice, but with film, showing these ISIS trucks carting stolen Syrian oil across the border into Syria to sell to Erdogan's son's oil company, and some of that oil eventually found its way to Israel. The Turkish government had threatened Serena Shame. She reported this to her superiors at press television and said that she had reason to be in fear of her life. Several days later, that came true when she died in a very, very mysterious car accident. A mysterious car accident that points to, frankly, a deliberate assassination. So we remember Serena Shame at press television today, and we talked about this on Duke's show on Rents yesterday. Wanted to mention this as well in regard to our big board. We've put up the legacy of Serena Shame from Middle East Eye. I mentioned that MBR and RBN listeners need to know who she was and exactly how her life ended. Then, of course, Dr. Slattery, you've posted this thing from NPR on how this Erdogan advisor provides a perspective on Turkey's attacks in Syria that omits a lot of key information, including the fact that it was the Erdogan regime that assassinated Serena Shame, for pointing out to international television audiences that Mr. Erdogan was doing business with ISIS. Max Blumenthal from the Gray Zone, also under War and Foreign Policy, has an absolutely critical read for us today. Meet the militant pro-Israel Trump official directing the economic war on Iran. Now, this is important that our listeners read it in conjunction with the next story, which is Philip Giraldi from the Strategic Culture Foundation sanctioning away free speech. Americans meet with Iranians at their peril. I put there editorially that unless, of course, these Americans are meeting with the terrorist MEK-MKO and their NCRI front organization at the behest of the Mossad. In that event, they even get paid thousands of dollars. Rudolph Giuliani, right? John Cornyn, Tom Ridge. The list just goes on, and the New York Times, however dated it is, has printed a list of all of these critical people in the American government and in high places in American government who have been working with the MEK-MKO terrorist organization, which was killing Americans in Pahlavi, Iran in the 1970s, and how this is a so-called Islamic Marxist religious cult organization, according to the RAND Corporation. And my good friend Dr. Paul Sheldon Foote of Cal State Fullerton, who used to work at our embassy in Iran years ago and who is an expert on the MEK. This is all right when it comes to a Zionist Jew like Sigal Mandelker, Mandelker. Max Blumenthal's post from the Gray Zone underscores that she is the one behind taking on all of these American activists and journalists who wanted to attend Iran's New Horizons conference and who attend these conferences in the Middle East, sponsored by various organizations. And if they're not pro-Zionist and pro-Israel, they receive visits from the FBI. And I know several people who got those visits personally. I haven't talked to them about the visits, but I know because it appeared in the media that several Americans with past security credentials in the American government and American national security backgrounds were approached by the FBI about criminal prosecution if they traveled to these conferences and spoke there. So get a good look at who this Treasury Department Undersecretary of Treasury is for terrorism and financial affairs, the Zionist Jew Sigal Mandelker. And take a look at that article from Max Blumenthal in the Gray Zone, because you will see this photo of Ms. Mandelker in her office with Zionist flags of the State of Israel behind her. No American flags, Zionist flags.
And this is amazing.
Absolutely amazing. So our folks need to take a look at those materials.
And what's her last name, Mandelker?
Yes, Mandelker, Sigal Mandelker.
Wow.
And to get a load of her official title, and if you want, I can even send you her picture. if you don't want to get sick on the air. But she is the Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence.
Oh, God. And, of course, who is the secretary? Who is the oversecretary? Okay. Of course, it's Steve Mnuchin, right?
Yes, it's Mnuchin. Another science Jew.
Ex-Goldman Sachs, ex-Hollywood. And who was her... I just pulled up her Wikipedia page real fast. Who was her predecessor? She was preceded by Sarah Bloom Raskin. Maybe not a household name. Sarah Bloom Raskin... before joining the Obama administration as a deputy secretary of state, had been on the board of governors of the Federal Reserve. Okay, imagine a Jewish woman on the board of governors of the Federal Reserve. Who would have guessed? Imagine my shock. And she is married to Representative Raskin. I think his name's Jamie Raskin. He's now in his second term, representing somewhere in Montgomery County or somewhere in Maryland where they have a lot of Jews. And his very first act as a member of Congress was to challenge the electoral vote of Alabama because of Russia. So there you go.
There you go. And there's a real critical thing. This story we posted.
Oh, and I'm sorry. So this Mandaker... the child of Holocaust survivors.
Yes, well, it gets even worse. Blumenthal says, from an influential post at the Treasury Department, she is the Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, Sigal P. Mandelker is a militantly pro-Israel lawyer with long-standing ties to right-wing political networks. And he mentioned several U.S. citizens have been questioned by the FBI and threatened with arrest for their participation in New Horizon, a public media conference held each year in Iran. They have really stepped it up in terms of going after people on this since 2014. I happen to know something about that. I've never attended one of those conferences. I've been invited in the past. But some things happened in 2014 that we don't have time to get into here. That pertain to some things that transpired then that are real eye-openers. But here you go, folks. Here it is. Mandelker, get a load of this, was reportedly involved, says Max Blumenthal, in brokering the infamous Florida deal that allowed the wealthy child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein to avoid federal charges. And since her appointment as Undersecretary of Treasury in 2017, she has been described on pro-Israel news sites as a, get a load of this, folks, Israeli-born, quote-unquote, former Israeli, quote-unquote. Yeah.
Former Israeli, that's...
Yeah.
And I wonder if... You know, I don't think the Israelis recognize former Israelis. I believe... Yes. That if she is ever going to go back to Israel, ever going to travel in Israel, it has to be under an Israeli passport. I don't think they would let her come back otherwise.
Well, here is Blumenthal clinches it all, folks. Here it is. Asked by the Gray Zone if Mandelker currently holds Israeli citizenship, and if so, whether she was given a special exemption that allowed her to obtain a security clearance, the United States Department of Treasury did not reply. Okay, so this is up there on our big board, and take a look at this, folks. This is obviously an agent of a foreign government who is an undersecretary of Treasury who is criminalizing people's First Amendment right to freedom of speech and freedom of association and freedom of international travel. We are not at war with Iran, much as people like Ms. Mandelker are trying to change that, but the long and the short of it is, yeah, she is the poster girl now for a Zionist-occupied American government. Oh. When you look at this picture from the Gray Zone, there she is with all of her food condiments behind her for visitors and nice drinking water cups in at least three Israeli flags. I'm going to say two Israeli flags flying behind her, and I'm not too sure what the other ones are. They are in the same color as the Israeli flag, but she has two Israeli flags flying in her official office. So there you have it. This is what we're dealing with here.
Yeah.
And obviously, this is just beyond the pale.
Okay. And so, like, I'm not that familiar with her in particular, but I'm, you know, looking at her Wikipedia page. And so she was appointed. She's one of, you know, Trump appointed her, and she was confirmed by the Senate. So I guess he had appointed her in March. She was confirmed by the Senate in June. But she was confirmed by 96-4. Now, 96-4, you say, oh, well, four people actually voted against her. But I had done a study of Trump's appointments, and at least at the cabinet level, lots of Trump's people were only being approved by a few votes. There was unprecedented votes against his appointments. I mean, the level of opposition to his appointments, and just think of you know, his Supreme Court appointments, who have just barely squeaked by. Says 96-4. So only four people had any qualms about approving an Israeli citizen to this very, very sensitive position. One more thing. Apparently, she just this month announced that she's stepping down, so she won't be this Undersecretary of the Treasury anymore. Guess who's replacing her? Another Jew.
Yeah.
So, I mean, she replaced a Jew. No, a Jew's replacing her.
What's the name of the replacement? I haven't seen it yet.
Justin Muzinich. I don't know.
Okay.
Muzinich. So Justin Muz. Justin Muzinich. So you've had three Jews in a row. I don't know who was before Sarah Bloom Raskin. Maybe it was another Jew. But I thought that the Constitution said there won't be a religious test for offices under the United States government. But it seems that there really is.
Yes, and that religious test is that one be a Zionist, preferably a Zionist Jew. But obviously, if you had a Christian Zionist lunatic who had any kind of background at all to be hired for that type of job, they could easily be put in there, and they would do Israel's bidding as well.
And so, by the way, it's four Jews in a row, because before Sarah Bloom Raskin, it was this guy Neil Wolin. Oh, just look at the face. So
yes.
There you go. There you go. And Wikipedia lists him as an American Jew.
Yes. Well, there you have it. Let me whip through the other quick stories on Syria we put up from today. John Sharman from the UK Independent. U.S. bombs its own base in Syria to reduce usefulness, quote unquote. Tyler Durden from Zero Hedge. U.S. military unlikely to withdraw from key Syrian oil fields. Czech Stockman on Syria. Check Russia Insight's YouTube video on the work of special forces of the U.S. providing secret cover for the ISIS retreat from northern Syria. And please look at what we've put up there on the big board on Serena Shim of Press Television, who was assassinated by Turkish intelligence on the Turkey-Syrian border 5 years ago this month.
Oh, my God. I keep looking back and back and back, and I'm just seeing more and more Jews in that office. All right, Jeffrey Goldstein, oh, so many of them. All right. Thanks, Mark, for coming on the show, and I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff, almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-877-877.
928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.